This is HPR episode 2483 entitled Useful Bash Functions, Part 4, and is part of the series Bash Scripting. It is hosted by Dave Morris and is about 40 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is a bash function for parsing lists of numbers and ranges.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hello everybody, this is Dave Morris. I've got a fourth show in the series about useful bash functions for you today. When I was putting it together, I was thinking it probably going to be the last one. But if I come up with anything else, and I have a sort of a general idea of another thing to do, then I might squeeze in another show. I've only got one function to look at this time. The concept of it is simple, but it's fairly complicated. And because of the way in which Bash works, the Bash scripts work, it needs quite a lot of explanation, I think. I've got some quite long show notes. The long notes are pretty big, and I suspect, just starting out, that it's going to be a long show. So that's really a warning. If you think, I can't listen to that, you turn it off now. But you might find it useful. You might find that the notes help more than me talking about it, but I'm going to give you both options. I put in the overview section of the notes that, as I usually do, that it would be interesting to receive any feedback on this function, because, you know, I haven't achieved perfection here at all. I've just managed to make something that works for my needs. I tried to make it a little bit more resilient to other uses, but I'm not going to have got it all right. And, of course, if you are writing functions or any bits of Bash at all and you'd like to talk about it as an HPR show, then that would be much appreciated, I think. So the function that we're dealing with this time is called range_parse, and the purpose of it is to read a string containing a range or ranges of numbers and turn it into the actual numbers intended. So for example, if you give it a range like 1-3, that means the numbers 1, 2, and 3. Now, I use this a lot. There's quite a few scripts that I've written that call upon it. It's really helpful when writing something where you want to select from a list. The script can show the list with a number against each item and then ask the user of the script to select which items they want to be acted on, deleted, moved, whatever the thing's about. For example, I manage the podcast I'm listening to using this in a couple of scripts. I usually have two or three players, MP3 players, like Sansa clips and that type of thing, and they have playlists on them, and I'm listening to them until the battery gets low and needs charging, and I pick up another one and continue listening to whatever's on there. And I have a script that knows which playlists are on which player, and it asks me which episode I'm listening to by listing all the playlists. And I answer with a range. So I might be partway through episode 5 on the first player and episode 10 on the next player and so forth. And it also knows what episodes I've marked as being listened to in the previous iteration. So it will offer me a list saying which of these can be deleted, and then it will delete them from the disk where they're kept, and also from the playlist that are held in a database. So this business of parsing a collection of ranges is not particularly difficult, and even in Bash, which is not the ideal programming language, it gets more complicated when you're dealing with the side issues, but we'll be going into that in some detail later. So the function range parse takes three arguments. The first one is the maximum value allowed. The minimum's always one. You can't give it negative numbers. So that's really to the list that you've presented your user has got 10 items in, say, so you want to prevent them from typing in item 11. Then there's the string containing the range expression itself. And I maybe should explain that it's meant to be a comma-separated list of just numbers or of these ranges, number, hyphen, number. And the third argument is the name of a variable to receive the result of expanding this range expression thing. So I've given an example here of how you might use it, which is preempting stuff a wee bit, but it starts off by sourcing the file containing the function. There are various ways to do this. You could embed it in the script you're writing. You could embed the actual code in there. You could put a source command in there, or you could put it in a library which you source into scripts and so forth. I do the final one. I have a library of these things. Then, having sourced it so that it's known to Bash, this is on the command line in this particular example, then type range parse, because functions are just like commands once they've been defined. Range parse space 10 space in quotes 1-4, 7, 3, 7 close quotes space parsed, P-A-R-S-E-D. That's the name of the variable that's going to receive the result. Then simply echo $parsed following, and the answer comes back 1, 2, 3, 4, 7. So there were two sevens in that list, but the thing doesn't care. Also, 1 to 4 includes 3, and then 3's there again. That also is not a problem. The result is simply a string consisting of numbers separated by spaces, which you could use then in a for loop, or you could put it into an array. There's all sorts of things you could do with it. So I've mentioned the algorithm. The reason I did this is because if you really didn't want to get into the guts of the function, maybe you just want to use it. You don't want to hear all the stuff about it. But you can just stop after I describe the algorithm, because I think you might find that interesting. What we do to process a range is, step one, we take in the range string and strip any spaces from it. It's then checked to ensure that what characters it now has are only digits, commas, and hyphens. If that's not true, then the function ends with an error, because you've got your expression wrong. Then it loops, selecting comma-separated elements one by one, and elements consisting only of groups of digits, in other words, numbers, are stored away for later. If the element contains a hyphen, then it's checked to make sure that it consists of two groups of digits separated by the hyphen, just in case you typed something like hyphen 3 without a 1 or some other number in front of the hyphen. And it's split up, and the range of numbers between its start and end is determined. So 1-3 turns into a thing that makes 1, 2, and 3. I'll be talking about that when we get to look at the script itself, the function itself. And the result of that expansion is also accumulated. So each time around this loop, whatever's been done by picking off an item from the comma-separated list, expanding it if necessary, is accumulated. Then the accumulated elements are checked to ensure that they are each in range. So if the maximum number is 10 and you'd sneaked an 11 or something greater in there, then that needs to be checked at this stage. It's not done at the sort of separation out stage, but it's done afterwards. And any that are not are rejected, and an error message produced showing what was rejected. And then finally, all the acceptable items are sorted, so it's removed the 11 if there was one, for example, and any duplicates are removed. That's how we got rid of the 2 3s and the 2 7s in that example earlier. And the list is returned as a string. So it's just the numbers in sorted order with spaces in between in a string. If any errors occurred in the analysis of the range and the function didn't immediately abort, but the errors like rejecting numbers outside the range, then the function returns a false value to the caller, otherwise it returns true. Now, that's really to allow it to be used where any sort of true-false value is expected, such as in an if statement. You can do that if you wish. It's not mandatory, but it can be useful if you want to do it that way. So that's the basic algorithm. Sounds pretty simple, eh? I think it is. Logically, it's quite simple. Maybe because it's written in Bash, which is not the best language, if it's even a language, best way of writing something like this. It's a bit more complicated than that. We have a 100-odd line function here, including comments, so it's less than 100, I think. So let's. What I've done is I've pasted the script itself, the function itself, into the notes, and it's got numbers along the left, so we can refer to them. But let's dive in and start looking line by line at what's happening. So if we start with line 11, that's the thing that starts function range pars. I just made the note that there's two ways of declaring a function in Bash. You can either just write the name of the function, range pars, followed by a pair of parentheses, and then the body of the function. And that's the thing usually enclosed in curly braces. I will talk about functions and defining them and stuff in another show. The alternative is that you start with the word function, then the function name. You can put parentheses if you want, and then you put the function body. There's no significant difference between the two. There are some very subtle differences, but we'll leave that for another time. Now, lines 12 and 13, the first two arguments for the function are then stored on these lines, stored in variables called max, the maximum permitted number in the range, and range, the string holding the range expression to pars. In both cases, we use the parameter expansion feature that I've done in other functions, which halts the script with an error message if these arguments are not supplied. So they're mandatory, and you can say so in the thing itself. Next, on line 14, we have something which we haven't seen before. We've got the declaration local space hyphen n, and it's creating a variable called result. And this holds the name of the variable external to the function, which will receive the result of parsing the expression. Now, using this hyphen n option makes it a name ref. And a name ref is a reference to another variable. I've chopped the definition from the Bash manual, quoted it here. Whenever the name ref variable is referenced, it says, referenced or assigned to unset or has its attributes modified, the operation is actually performed on the variable specified by the nameRef variable's value. A nameRef is commonly used within shell functions to refer to a variable whose name is passed as an argument to the function. Now, there's more to talk about with regard to nameRef variables. I plan to do and more about these in other Bash episodes further on. So we'll leave it at that now, but the basics of it are that you hand in the name of a variable, and the function then goes through this nameRef variable in order to access that external variable. It's a type of redirection, if that means anything to you. Line 16, there are some other variables local to the function which are declared here. And in this case, exit code, one of the variables, is given an initial value of 0. Now, on line 21, there's an expression in which range is being processed and saved back into itself, the range variable, and along the way its internal spaces, all spaces, are being removed. Now, I did talk about this way back when in one of the Bash series that I've done. I can't remember if I've referenced it in this particular show, but look back through some of my Bash shows if you want to dig deeply into what that actually means and how it works. Now, next, lines 26 to 29 consist of a test, an if statement, and the range variable is here being checked against a regular expression, and I want to do a show on regular expressions in Bash very soon, and this one consists only of the digits 0 to 9, a comma, and a hyphen. And these are the only characters allowed in a range list, as I mentioned in the algorithm section. If the match fails, an error message is written and the function returns with a false value. So it says invalid range, shows you the range, and then exits with value 1, which if you're looking for that, you can say, you know, you messed up, so try again. Now this next chunk gets into some of the complexity. It's not that complex, but when you look at it, you go, well, I would go anyway, wow, what on earth is this all about? So I'm going to try and explain this, and I will go into some detail here. We're looking at lines 36 to 61. Now this is a loop. It's an until loop, and it is testing every time around the loop whether the variable range is zero, empty, zero length. Now this loop is actually chopping the range list up into its component parts based on the commas. Each time it iterates, a comma-separated element is removed from the range variable, and so it grows shorter. And that test of whether it's empty will become true when the whole lot has been sliced up. And there are probably other ways you could do that. I mean, you could probably chop it up and put it into an array and then iterate through the array. I didn't, when I wrote this, this is old, this code originated quite some number of years ago, maybe 10 years ago, something like that. I didn't know about arrays in Bash. Wasn't completely sure that they existed. I'm not sure they existed then. Don't know. But they certainly weren't on my radar. So that's partly why it works this way. But it's okay. I think it's a valid way of doing it. So lines 40 through 46, here we've got a thing that checks to see if the range variable contains a comma. It does it with a regular expression. And if it does, so it's an if-else type thing, it creates the variable item which was declared earlier. The variable item is filled with the characters of range up to the first comma. It does that by using the slicing capabilities of parameter expansion, again, which I've discussed earlier, a couple of years ago maybe now. And then range is set to its previous contents less that bit that's been chopped off. Now, if there was no comma in range, that means there's only one element there. So there's only one element there, or we're down to one element after doing a series of chopping. So we just put what's there into this item variable and set range to empty. Lines 51 to 59 is a test where we've now got something in element. Got an element in item. Sorry, I'm getting my names mixed up. We've got an element, a bit between commas, in the item variable. And it's either going to be a plain number, which is easy, we don't need to do anything else with it, or it's a range expression of the form number hyphen number. Now, there's an if statement and another if statement afterwards inside it. The outer if tests to see whether the item contains a hyphen. And if it is, if it does, I should say, then the inner if is invoked. Now, when I was rereading these notes ready to work to do this recording, I suddenly realised that seems very bizarre. Why would you do that? Because some of this is old, and I've sort of semi-forgotten why I did what I did. So I put a footnote here that explains. Why did I do it this way? I did a double take while preparing these notes, wondering why I had organised the logic here in this way. The first part of the loop is concerned with getting the next item from a comma-separated list. At that point, the contents of item, the variable item, is either a bare number or a number hyphen number range. But a differentiator between the two is a hyphen. So checking for that character allows the complex regular expression on line 52 to be omitted if it's not there. So it's just for efficiency, really. So I've written here, if you can think of a better way of doing this, please let me know in the comments or by email. So let's go to line 52, if we've got a hyphen in there. This compares the contents of item against a more complex regular expression. And this one looks for one or more digits, a hyphen, and then one or more digits. And if this is found, then the item is edited to replace the hyphen by a pair of dots. Why? Yeah, well, this is inside braces, as the argument to an echo statement. If you've given the range 1-5 in item, the echo will be given open brace 1.5 close brace. You'll recognize that from an earlier show in this series of bash scripting. It's a brace expansion expression, so we're echoing this thing. Now, the complexities of brace expansion are that it has to be a command on the command line, but it's not if you just do an echo at this point, because inside the echo there's a parameter substitution, and once the parameter substitution is finished, the brace expansion, that is, the contents of the brace expansion contain the result, but it won't then be executed. So you have to put the whole thing in an eval statement. So you're building a command for eval, and the command for eval is echo and then number dot dot number, and then it will work. So if you gave it 1.5 in braces, then the result should be that item gets filled with the numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. If the regular expression doesn't match, then this isn't a valid range. So this is reported in the else branch, invalid sequence, it says. And the item variable is cleared of its contents. We don't want it. Also, because we want this error reported to the caller, we set exit code to 1. And we'll see that being used later on. So what we've got is that if an invalid range is given, it's rejected, but the loop keeps going. And then on line 60, there's a variable called selection, and that's accumulating the successive contents of item on each iteration. We're using the plus equals form of assignment to make it easier to do it, to do the accumulation. There are other ways of doing it, but Bash allows you to do this plus equals. Again, when I first wrote this, I don't think I knew about it, or maybe it didn't exist. I'm not sure. It's hard to know which of these was so. Anyway, notice that when adding to selection, item gets a trailing space put on it, and that means that none of the numbers collide with one another in the string. So line 61 is the end of that particular loop. So let's look at lines 66 to 97. This is a moderately sizable chunk. I've actually detailed it. It's almost a page full of stuff in the notes. Apologies for this. It's hopefully the notes plus me talking about it will help you understand what I'm trying to do here. So on this particular line, 66, there's an if statement. Ends at 97, obviously. And it's checking to see, first of all, if the variable selection actually contains anything. You could well have handed this function a range expression which contained nothing that was valid. So it will have been thrown away, and selection will contain nothing. So we need to check that. There's no point in working on an empty thing. Line 71 to 77 is a loop, and it cycles through the numbers in the selection variable. Now, it's a feature of this type of loop for I in $selection that it accepts a list of space-separated items. You see instances where people do this with the result of an ls command, or with all sorts of things which return lists of stuff space-separated. And of course, the selection variable contains a list of numbers separated by spaces. So inside this loop, there's an if statement from line 72 to 76. This if statement checks each number to ensure that it's in range between 1 and whatever's in the variable max. If it's not in range, then the number is appended to the variable err, I suppose you'd pronounce it. If it is in range, it's added to a variable SEL selection. So it's stored away as an error in the first instance, or it's stored away as one of the numbers in the selection. And that's basically what it does. It's just filtering out the good from the bad in the list that's been constructed. Lines 82 to 87 is another if, and this is determining if there's anything in the ERR variable. If it contains anything, then there have been one or more errors, so we want to report them. And there's a problem. There's a sort of oddity here. The test that's being used here is weird, and it's the result of failing to do things the way I would have expected them to work and searching around for alternative ways of doing it. Now, I set up an explanation section, which is down below in the notes. There's an expression, dollar open brace, ERR plus open double quotes, dollar open brace, ERR, close brace, close quotes, close brace. It's also in line 93, which we'll look at shortly. And it's a very, very odd expression. The conclusion I've drawn is that there's a bug in Bash that's causing this not to do what you would expect it to do. That's not my conclusion necessarily. It's what others have commented on. And it might be fixed, I don't know, in a later iteration of Bash. The reason there's an issue is because in all of my scripts I use the line set space hyphen O space no unset, and there's an equivalent which is set space plus U. What this does is it treats the use of unset variables in parameter expansion as a fatal error. It's a good way of catching yourself writing code where you forget to initialize stuff and then go and use it. But the problem here is that either the ERR or the SEL variables might be unset in this particular function in some circumstances. And it will result in the function stopping with an error. So it should be possible to test a variable to see whether it's unset without crashing the function, but it doesn't seem to be the case. And this particular arcane expression achieves what's needed here. The expression is actually a case of the parameter expansion, which is usually written as dollar open brace parameter colon plus word close brace. But you can remove the colon and it changes the meaning slightly. The expression used on line 82 returns a null string if the parameter is unset or null, or the contents of the variable if it has any. And it does so without triggering the unset variable alarm, whatever you like to call it. As I've said here, I don't like resorting to magic solutions like this, but it seems to be a viable way of avoiding the issue, I guess, just at the moment. Hopefully that particular problem will be resolved at a later stage. You should just be able to say, is this variable empty? Where is the variable empty means if it's not even set, well, then it must be empty. It's declared in this code, so it's not as if Bash doesn't know that it exists. It exists as an entity, but it's just unset if there are no errors, for example. So you shouldn't have to, you shouldn't cause an error if you say, tell me if this thing is unset or if it's empty. Because really the two things are the same in certain contexts. I mean, in some contexts you might want to separate the two out. It's a very esoteric point, and I apologise for it, but it's a way of getting around this particular issue. So if we look at line 83, having passed by this, so basically we're saying, is there anything in the ERR string? And if the answer is yes, then we go on to line 83, where the variable MSG is filled. See, I'm writing these names and they're completely unpronounceable. It's filled with the list of errors. And the way we do that is, why would you do this? You might be saying, well, we'll come to it in a minute. This is done with a command substitution expression, where the for loop is used to list the numbers in ERR using an echo command. And these are then piped into the sort command. The sort command makes what it receives unique and sorts them numerically. You'll notice if you look that it says sort minus UN or hyphen UN. Try not to say minus. The U means make it unique, and the N means do numerical sorting, otherwise it will do string sorting where 1 and 10 sort above 2. So that's the way in which we get rid of duplication and also sort stuff into the right order. Now why are we doing this stuff? Sort doesn't work on one line. You can't just give it one line of stuff and say sort that, because it is designed to work on a series of lines in a file. So this command substitution here is a bit of trickery, which takes each thing, puts it into echo, and echo produces a new line at the end of each thing that it echoes, and it sends that stream of lines to sort, and the result comes back as the various numbers that are then sorted and made unique, each separated by a new line in one string. Line 84, because of all this new line jiggery-pokery, that is used to strip out all the new lines or replace them by spaces. Now, there's another piece of strangeness here. It's not a bug. This is a clever thing, but it needs a bit of explanation. I've made a sort of digressive explanation here, because otherwise it would make this nested list thing that I've constructed so horrible to read. So I should have made it a footnote, because you can jump to a footnote and jump back again. I'm discovering this as I'm actually scrolling through my notes now. The issue is the expression dollar single quote backslash n single quote. What this is an example of what's referred to as ANSI C quoting. If you look at the GNU Bash reference manual, and I've got a link to it about ANSI C quoting, it'll explain it in a bit more detail than I'm going to here. The construct's got to be written as this dollar followed by single quoted string, and it's expanded to whatever characters in the string with certain backslash sequences being replaced according to the ANSI C standard. So this allows you to put in stuff like new line backslash n, character return backslash r, and even stuff like Unicode characters. So for example, echo dollar single quote backslash capital U 2192 close quote produces a thing called a right arrow, which I chose that one because there's loads of Unicode things. I tried to do the pile of poo one, but I couldn't get it to work. This one works in a browser and on the command line. I think it's terminal emulator dependent, actually, but it does work. It's definitely in the notes. So something that might be of interest to some people who want to use these characters in various contexts. So jumping back to line 84, now we've got this MSG thing properly formatted and made unique and sorted and new lines replaced by spaces, and we print it out on line 85. Line 85 prints it out using a printf command, where the message is value bracket s out of range, and then we substitute in the string that's in this MSG variable. And finally, we set exit code to 1. So what will happen is, if you have provided a lot of values which are erroneous, then we'll get a report. Then lines 92 to 96, we are rebuilding the selection. We've removed any errors from it. I'm now going to prepare it for output as the final result. So we've got another one of these. First of all, we set selection, the variable selection, we empty it on line 92. Then we check to see whether there is anything in the cell variable, and then we do the same trick of a for loop echoing stuff into sort, which makes it unique and sorts it in the correct order. Then we take the result of that, store it into the variable selection, then we take selection and we strip out all the new lines that have been added to it. So by the time we've been through lines 92 to 96, we have reformatted the list of selected numbers. So line 102, we're happy with this selection variable, so we simply save its contents into the result variable that we got in as an argument. And that writes the result back to the variable that we handed in the first place, because it's a name ref, remember? Line 104 then returns from the function, and it returns with whatever is in exit code. If no errors have been detected, this will be the zero that it started out at. But if an error has occurred, then it's been set to 1. So I made a list of possible improvements. There's probably a lot more, actually. It's a funny thing, when you're looking through this stuff, trying to explain it, you actually see issues and shortcomings even then. Even though I've looked at it so many times over the years, I still see things that are deficiencies. But I made a few notes about it. I started doing this in the 2000s. I can't remember when exactly, but certainly a bit before I retired, 2006, 2007, something like that. And since then, I've been using it in my own projects. And even in the during the process of getting this ready for this show, I've made some improvements. Here's 3 points that sprang to mind, anyway. The initial space removal process means that something like 7, 1-5 and 7, 1 with lots of spaces, 1-5, the two are identical as far as the algorithm's concerned. I think that's good. But it also means if by accident you typed 4, 2 when you forgot to put a comma between them, then the two numbers will be squished together to make 42. That might be a problem. Not sure I can solve it, but there are potential problems. At the very least, you might go, huh? I typed 4. Oh, no, I didn't type 4. I got 42 back. Oh, what's going on? I don't know. The command substitution, which sorts the list of numbers and all that stuff to make them unique using the sort command. I'd like to avoid using external programs if I can, but trying to do this type of thing in Bash, which is possible, I think, but it's hell of a convoluted. So it's not really an improvement. There's something in me that wants to make that change, but it would be stupid to do so, because sort does a fine job. Final point, the reporting of all the numbers which are out of range could lead to somewhat bizarre error report. So if you accidentally typed in arguments such as 20 5-200, where you meant to type 5-20 and you accidentally added another zero, then you're going to get an error report that reports all the numbers between 21 and 200 as being out of range. So we could do with something, changing the function so it's a bit cleverer. Perhaps when the number of errors exceeds some value, we simply put the first and last values and put 3 dots in between, or 2 dots or something, to show everything between 21 and 200 is an error. So I've got some examples of use of this. I'm not going to read these out. I think you can probably work through them yourself. But there are three command line usage things, which is probably not the way you'd use this anyway, but just to prove, just me proving that it does certain things and how it does them. If you give it a sequence which is in the wrong order, it doesn't care, because it's going to sort them at the end anyway. It doesn't care if there are overlaps. We already looked at this. If you do ranges and single numbers or range, two ranges that overlap one another, then it's not going to be an issue, because the duplicates will be removed by the sort minus UN business. It also doesn't care about empty items, so if you give it 1, 2, there's an empty item between there, but the empty items will actually be processed, but at the end of the day they won't make it through to the output. It does, there's an example with an out of range item which is flagged, but it continues because we're not testing the result in this particular case. It doesn't cause any issues, really. It's just omitted from the final list. So I made a little demo script to run this thing, and I've made it downloadable. I called it range_demo.sh. You can download it and play around with it if you want to. The idea was that this is a script which calls range pars, and you give the script two arguments, the first two arguments to range pars, and then it provides its own third argument, and then it reports what it did. It also does a test on the result. So if you run it as .range_demo.sh, then a 10 1, 9-7, 2, it comes back and says success, and then it says parse list, colon, 12789. So it was partly just I was using this to test it, make sure it works and stuff. But if you're interested, you could mess around with it yourself. So if you test it and find any errors, then please let me know, because I would appreciate it. So I think I've finished. Hopefully that was not too boring, and it was useful to you in some form or other. Get back to me if you'd like any further explanation on anything. If I didn't explain it very well, feel free to do so. I've given you some references here to the GNU Bash manual and this ANSI C quoting in particular. The GNU Bash reference manual is an excellent source of information. You can type man bash on the command line, but boy, finding stuff in that huge man page is not easy. The reference manual is indexed and so forth, so it's a lot better. Plus also you can do searches through it, and it just seems to be a really well put together document. So I definitely recommend that if you want to get deeper into bash stuff. Okay, that's it then. Bye now.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club, and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.